wonderful good morning to all of you. I first want to say thank you to all of you who helped in the memorial service, setting up, the food you prepared, the breaking down. Thank you so much. It really was a great memorial service, a great tribute to her, and it was a great family effort, and we appreciate that so much. I know the family does, and they'd want me to express that to all of you. So thank you so much. I want to start this morning with an animated film, pretty popular film from Pixar called Ratatouille. And most of us know it's kind of an interesting little film about a rat that becomes enamored with a cooking show, a French cooking show, where Chef Gusteau tells everybody anyone can cook. And of course, he has a cookbook with that very title, Anyone Can Cook. And in the course of the movie, you find out that many people mock Chef Gusteau, that not everyone can cook, not everyone can become a great chef, and that he's ridiculous to say such a thing. But this little rat becomes enamored with that. And it's kind of a neat movie because you, of any creature living on the earth, you would not expect a rat to become a good chef, a great chef. And that's exactly what happens to the rat. And so the least likely creature becomes a marvelous cook. And that kind of sets up what we want to talk about this morning. We want to talk about faith, but not just any type of faith. We want to talk about what I call marvelous faith, or I should say, what Jesus called marvelous faith. As we talked about yesterday, the life of our dear sister Christine, I don't think anyone would disagree that she was a woman of marvelous faith. But we don't want to just talk about marvelous faith, because as we look at Christine, it doesn't shock us that she had such a marvelous faith. I mean, she was raised by Christian parents. She married a Christian man who preached the gospel and probably would have preached for many years of his life if it hadn't been for his medical difficulties. It doesn't shock us that she had marvelous faith, because we know the spirit and the heart of Christine. We want to talk about marvelous faith, though, in what I call the least likely. The interesting thing in the Bible is that it does tell us the stories of those who had marvelous faith. And a lot of times we look at those like David, and we look at others like David, and we say, it's not a shock to see marvelous faith. But the neat thing about the New Testament, and even the Old Testament, is that it tells us the story of certain characters that no one would think in 100 years, that they would be capable of faith alone, let alone marvelous faith. And so we're going to talk about marvelous faith from the least likely. And the reason we're going to do this, here's the purpose of this lesson. I truly believe that there are a lot of Christians that could have or reach that marvelous faith, but they see themselves as the least likely. For one reason or another, they have this attitude in themselves that they're not worth much in the kingdom. They don't have a whole lot of talent. And so because of the way they view themselves, they never really strive or see themselves. And a lot of times, what you become is what you see yourself as becoming. How you can picture yourself And in the same regard, you don't become that person if you can't even picture yourself as that person. And so I hope this will be, if I'm speaking to you, that this will be an encouragement to look at things a little different. There are sometimes Christians that don't reach out to become great in faith because of what others may view of them. They may let others judge them, and perhaps it was being raised in a certain way or a certain home, or perhaps it's in the adult life, that the way people look at you, they look at you as the least likely person to have any type of faith, let alone marvelous faith, and we've bought into that. And again, if I'm speaking to you this morning, I hope that you'll let God look at your faith and God be the judge of your faith and not others. Because, again, looking at the screen, there's a distinction here. You see this top part, this marvelous faith? That's a title that comes from Jesus himself. That's the way God saw these people's faith. That's the way Jesus titled their faith. They had faith that made Jesus marvel. But this right down here at the bottom, this least likely, that's the way man looked at these people. And so don't let yourself, don't let others be the judge of your faith or help you to shape the way you look at yourself and your faith and what you're capable of. But let God be the one that looks at your faith, because God will say, I can do great things with you. Even when everyone else, even when yourself, you think it's not likely. It's not possible. And so, marvelous faith from the least likely. And the character we're going to look at this morning is a Roman centurion. And the story is found in Luke chapter 7. If you would, turn with me there to Luke chapter 7, beginning of verse 1. In Luke 7, verse 1, we read, in verse 1, "And when Jesus had completed all of his discourse in the hearing of the people, he went to Capernaum. And a centurion slave who was highly regarded by him was sick and about to die. And look at this, verse 3. When he heard about Jesus, he sent some Jewish elders asking him to come and to save the life of his slave." Let's stop right there for a second. So you have this Roman centurion. I'm going to ask you, when you think about in the Bible Roman soldiers, well, what pops up in your mind? I always kind of interested what Christians think about with certain things, almost like word association. I'm going to tell you a word and you tell me the word that pops in your mind, right? Roman soldier. Well, I would imagine most of us think of, you know, a Gentile, a Roman, that, you know, didn't care about God, that was kind of a big, burly man, trained in warfare, kind of a machismo type of man. Probably the best description we have of Roman soldiers comes from that story where some were coming to John the Baptizer. Remember that? And they were asking, "What shall we do?" Tax collectors were asking that question. Others were asking. And there were some soldiers that asked, "And what shall we do?" And you remember what John the Baptizer told them? He said to them, "Stop taking money from others by force and be content with your wages." That's probably the way we picture most Roman soldiers, that they abused their position and their authority, and so they just took money by force because they could.
And that's how they padded their pocketbooks and how they made a little extra money, because they didn't think that they were paid enough for what they did. I think a lot of us know that there are still some countries where law enforcement practices kind of the same thing. I know in Romania they like to pull you over for no reason at all, and to keep you there from some trumped up charge, hoping that you will give them a bribe. Now, they don't physically take it from you, but that's very common. And so that might be the way we picture most Roman soldiers. But the interesting thing is that this centurion appears to be very different from what we might think as the stereotypical Roman soldier. And he's not just a Roman soldier, he's a leader, he's a centurion, which usually is defined as a leader of at least 100 men. And we kind of know that macho leader type stereotype. But this man appeared to be different. In fact, there are at least three centurions I can think of in the New Testament, and they have a pretty good track record with God and his people. One of the things that makes this centurion look a little bit different is the fact that he was concerned, in fact, concerned enough to go to the Jewish people and to ask the Jewish elders to go get Jesus and to bring Jesus to his house to save not a daughter, not a son, not a wife, a slave. Again, you probably have heard that a lot of people thought of slaves as not really humans, but more of a possession. And that you could picture maybe that there would be a person, a Roman soldier, a Roman centurion, who had a slave who got sick to the point of death, and their attitude might be, well, you know, if they die, I'll just get another one. Kind of like we do with appliances today. TVs, blenders, toasters, whatever. Just throw it away and we'll get another. We don't repair it, we just throw it away and get another one. It's just a possession. And that's the way a lot of people looked at slaves. But here was a Roman centurion. Imagine he's got a family to care for, he's got soldiers to take care of, he's got leaders to answer to, and yet he takes the time to have compassion and concern enough to send for Jesus to come and to heal his slave, his possession. The parallel account to this is found in Matthew chapter 8. And in this point, it's a little different. In Matthew 8 verse 6, he has the centurion asking Jesus, telling Jesus, "My servant is lying paralyzed at home, suffering great pain." And so perhaps putting these two together, perhaps there was some type of disease, some type of sickness that first attacked at the legs, paralyzing the man, perhaps infection or something that came about from it that would take his life. But here he has compassion for his servant. And in one point, it may not seem to stand out too much because there's a lot of people that don't believe in God, that don't do much for God. But when they get desperate, they will seek out God. Even atheists will pray to God if they get desperate enough. And so at this point, there's not a whole lot that makes this Roman centurion stand out too much, other than the fact that he is concerned about a slave, where others would just look at a slave as a lost possession. But from this point on, what happens between this Roman soldier and Jesus causes this centurion to just pop off the page. And that's what I hope to bring out to you this morning. I want this centurion to pop off the page of your Bible and into your mind and your heart. So what does he do? He goes to the Jewish elders. And he says, "Hey, I need you to go to Jesus. I've heard about this Jesus, this miracle worker. And I need you to ask Jesus to come to my house." Now, you and I know about Jewish-Gentile relations, don't we? We know that's not going to happen in a million years. How do Jews look at Gentiles? And maybe even especially Romans, who are their oppressors. And maybe even especially the Roman soldiers and centurions. They're not going to do this. They look at Gentiles as being unclean. They try to stay as far away from them as possible. They won't eat with them. They won't drink with them. Just look at Acts chapter 10. What God has to do with Peter to get him to go and to preach to Cornelius and these Gentiles in his house. He's got to do some remarkable things. So clearly these Jewish elders are not going to do this, right? No, we find out that that's exactly what they do. Another thing that makes this Roman centurion outstanding is that he was able to break down this barrier wall between Jew and Gentile even before Jesus did. Take a look again at verse 3 and let's keep reading. And when he heard about Jesus, he sent some of the Jewish elders asking him to come and to save the life of his slave. And when they came to Jesus, so they do this, they come to Jesus. And look at, they earnestly implored him, saying, "He is worthy for you to grant this to him, for he loves our nation, and it was he who built us our synagogue." Do you understand what's going on here? Do you see what these Jewish elders say to Jesus about a Gentile? That doesn't happen. They don't talk about Gentiles that way. But these do. He was able to break down this barrier wall and befriend this Jewish group around his little circle. And there's a great lesson in that by itself. There's a lot of times we have barrier walls in our life. Are you thinking about one right now? Someone that you have this barrier with. How did this Roman centurion break down that wall? Well, as I look at it, based on their words, it looks like he took the first step. I mean, a lot of the Romans didn't like the Jews because they saw them as judgmental. You know, you don't like us, well, we don't like you. But he didn't take that approach. He showed them love. He supported them. He built their synagogue for them. Now, do you understand that? He built them a place of worship where if he wanted to go into it, even though he built it, they'd say, "You're not welcome here. You can't come in here. You're not a Jew." And a lot of people would be offended by that. "Hey, I'm the one that gave this to you." He didn't take that approach. And I want to tell you, to break down the barrier walls in our lives, we've got to sometimes take that first step. And we've got to love people that are different than us. And we can't have that chip on our shoulder where we get offended by everything that they might think or believe. You know, one of the things that was said last night is Christine was not perfect, and we know that. She was pretty close, I think. But her family loved her. And there's just some things about Christine, you just have to laugh. Right? One of the stories that was circulating around, I just got to share this. It's before my time. But apparently, you know how we have the letters Brea, or Church of Christ, out on the wall in the front? Apparently, the T fell off Christ. And so it said Church of Chris. Well, someone told Christine about this. She was infuriated. She was upset. So she did not want it to say Church of Christ. So she went out there, this is what they said, and ripped off, pulled out the S. So it just said CHRI, I guess. That was Christine, right? You and I probably wouldn't do that. But here's a Roman centurion, and he's broken down this barrier wall. And we can do the exact same thing with the barrier walls in our lives. A lot of times what happens is that chip on our shoulder. And I know, because I have it on my shoulder.
So the Jewish elders go to Jesus and they say, he's worthy. And so look, if you would, at verse 6. Now Jesus started on his way with them. And let's stop right there. I think one of the other remarkable things that you see in this story is that this Roman centurion, I would believe, sent the Jewish elders to Jesus because he understands this barrier wall. That even though he has befriended these Jews, he doesn't expect Jesus to have the same attitude. He expects Jesus to think of him as unclean. And so instead, he sends his own people to Jesus. And even in that, I can imagine the little wheels are going around in his mind saying, I've just asked Jesus, a Jew, this glorious miracle worker, to come to the house of a Gentile. And I would imagine he started getting kind of worried about that. And so in verse 6, as Jesus started on the way with them, and when he was not far from the house, the centurion sent friends. He sends another delegation, saying to him, Lord, do not trouble yourself further, for I am not worthy for you to come under my roof. And for this reason, I did not consider myself worthy to come to you. But just say the word, and my servant will be healed. For I am also a man placed under authority with soldiers under me. And I say to this one, go, and he goes, and to another, come, and he comes, and to my slave, do this, and he does it. The remarkable thing about this is that this man gets Jesus to heal his slave, and he never sees Jesus. He never lays eyes on Jesus. They never come face to face. Jesus never sees the man. Never sees his slave. And the words of this centurion just pop up. I am not worthy for you to come into my house. That's such great humility. I'm not worthy for you to come to my house. Again, there is no chip on his shoulder. There is no arrogance in this man. There's a lot of people that just didn't want to put up with the Jews because they looked at as them as arrogant, judgmental people. But this man took a different approach.
And finally, probably one of the most remarkable things about his faith is that he understood, and I'm going to put it this way, the power of authority. Now we got to flesh this out a little bit. Because he says to Jesus, hey, just say the word and I know it will be done because I understand how authority works. And I don't know at what point he started making these connections. But do you understand what he's saying to Jesus? I understand how authority works. I say to a soldier physically, go do something physically, and physically he does it. And I say to another, I say, go do this physically, and he goes and does that physical thing. And I know that these physical things happen because I have authority over those men. And then he translates that into, so I know you can say something and a miracle will be done. You don't have to be present. You don't have to touch someone. He takes what he understands about the way authority and power works on a physical level, and he attributes it to Jesus on a spiritual, miraculous level. Do you get that? You know, we have trouble doing that.
We limit our prayers and the power of God because we put that limitation on God. He didn't do that.
That is incredible. And I know it is incredible. In fact, it is marvelous because in verse 9, here's the reaction of Jesus. Get this, verse 9. Now, when Jesus heard this, he marveled. New American Standard. He marveled at him. That's why we call this marvelous faith. It was faith that made Jesus marvel. He marveled at him, and he turned and said to the crowd that was following him, I say to you, not even in Israel have I found such great faith. And when those who had been sent returned to the house, they found the slave in good health.
If you were to think of someone of great, marvelous faith, someone capable of that, I guarantee you, your first thought wouldn't be a Roman centurion. He might be the least likely.
And yet Jesus says to this group that is around as all this happens, he says, not in all of Israel, not among all the Jews, have I found such great, marvelous faith. Do you get that? Wow. Now, I want to finish off with this. I want to contrast the faith of this Roman centurion with some others. And my purpose here is not to create a straw horse so this guy looks even better and a straw horse that's easy to break down. I'm not going to contrast him to those of weaker faith. I'm going to contrast him to others of strong faith. Those that we would most likely expect it. For example, a synagogue official. When you think about faith in God, I would imagine most of us say, yeah, I can imagine a synagogue official would be very faithful to God. I mean, he's the one that determines the very scriptures that are read on the Sabbath day. Well, in Matthew chapter 9, verse 18, we read of a synagogue official. The other parallels call him Jairus. I like to pronounce it Jairus. And it's a very similar story where his daughter is sick. In fact, she's not only sick, she has died. And Jairus comes to Jesus to ask him to come, just like this centurion. And so Matthew 9:18, while he was saying these things to them, behold, there came a synagogue official, and he bowed down before him, saying, my daughter has just died, but come and lay your hands on her, and she will live. The Jewish people believed in the resurrection, but they didn't attribute it to Jesus. Here is a synagogue official. Here is Jairus, who says to Jesus, my daughter is dead, but come and you can make her alive. There weren't Jews saying that in those days. That wasn't a wide belief about Jesus. And in fact, a lot of them believe once there was death, that's it. Jesus gone. It's no more. This is a man of great faith. Now, we might expect that faith. He might be one of the most likely to have that faith. But he had a faith that wasn't found in most people. Now, granted, the centurion's slave was still alive. But do you see the contrast, the comparison? Even though he has this great faith, he believes that Jesus has to come and be present and lay his hands on her. He's not saying to Jesus, just say the word. He says, come. To me, this strong synagogue official's faith just highlights how great this Roman centurion's faith was. Just say the word. Stop Jesus from coming. Let's contrast it with another, Mary and Martha. Mary and Martha are not lightweights when it comes to disciples of Jesus. They're on the top of the list. They have found a love for Jesus and a way to express that love and to support him. They're some of the strongest disciples Jesus had, some of the most faithful. And yet when we contrast them to the Roman centurion, not a straw horse, but look at some of the strongest disciples that Jesus has,
again, he it's just remarkable that the faith he has. In John 11, verse 32, Lazarus has died. In fact, Jesus has waited so that Lazarus would die. And therefore, when Mary came where Jesus was, she saw him and fell at his feet, saying to him, look what she says, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died.
Not quite as strong a faith as the synagogue official.
Here's a good example of strong, faithful disciples putting that limitation on God, putting that limitation on Jesus, that point of death. Now that he's dead, there's no more you can do. It's impossible.
The synagogue official said, just say the word. The centurion said, just say the word.
There is one other time where the New Testament says that Jesus marveled. There's two times. Now, there is a lot of marveling in the New Testament, but most of the marveling is about people and their reaction to Jesus. People that marvel at Jesus, what he says, they marveled. What he did, they marveled. But there's two times, at least two times in the New Testament, where it says Jesus marveled. One of them is what we're talking about this morning, the Roman centurion. The other one was with the people that knew him the best, that saw him day after day as he grew up, the people of Nazareth. And so in Mark chapter 6, and I'm going to kind of spin this around because it reads the way I want to. Verse 6, and then we're going to jump back up to verse 5. Romans 6, verse 6, and then jump up to verse 5, and it reads this way. And he marveled. And this is the King James Version. He marveled because of their unbelief. And he could there do no mighty work, save that he laid his hands upon a few sick folk and healed them. Now, one thing I want to say very quickly about this. A lot of people have this idea, because they didn't believe in Jesus, somehow his power was limited to only heal a few people that had faith. I think what this really is reading is because they didn't believe in Jesus, they were not bringing the sick to him. They weren't bringing the lame, the blind. And it makes sense, if you don't believe in him, you're not going to think he can do anything except a few folk. So Jesus marveled. One time at unbelief. Incredible, marvelous unbelief. And the other time Jesus marveled at marvelous faith. Marvelous belief. One of the things about these least likely characters is they're never given the name. The Bible doesn't tell us who they are. And it's almost telling as if they wouldn't want it to be known. That's the type of character they were. They don't have to be great. They don't have to have everyone know their name. They don't have to be recorded in the annals of the Bible as I want people to know who I am. A lot of people think this is Cornelius, because he's very similar to this Roman centurion. And remember verse 1 where this takes place? Capernaum. I don't know if there's enough evidence for that. I think it's probably safe to say it wasn't him. But maybe it was. But no matter the case, both Matthew and Luke don't name him. And I think that's very, very telling. And so as we close this morning, marvelous faith. I think often Christians feel that they have no value, ability, or talent. Perhaps this comes as they compare themselves to others. They feel that they are not capable of marvelous faith because of their own lack of self-confidence. We need to understand that great faith can come from anyone, even those who see themselves as least likely
or those seen that way by others. Anyone can cook. Anyone can have faith. But at the end of that movie, what they find out is Gusteau wasn't saying that everyone can become a great chef. He was saying everyone can cook, but only a few will have that great ability to become a world-renowned chef, a great chef. Everyone can have faith. In fact, everyone can have marvelous faith. But the reality is, only a few will have that marvelous faith. And one of the reasons is because we let people tell us we're the least likely. That's not what God is saying. And so if we can help you this morning to take that next step of faith, to do even more, maybe something you're not comfortable doing, on that road to marvelous faith, stronger faith, greater faith, just say the word this morning and we'll help you. If we can do that for you this morning, why don't you come forward as together we stand and as we sing.